Hello and welcome to The Fathers, a show about two different kinds of fathers, a married dad of five kids, and a Catholic priest. We're friends talking about sports, beer, movies, and the everyday joys and challenges we share in common. Hello, Father Chip. Welcome to this special edition.
Hello, Dom. As tired as I am, and as probably you are too, this is February 6th, a great day.
February 6th, 2017, for those of you listening in the future, the day after the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Yes, the greatest single-handed comeback by Tom Brady, the MVP, the king of football.
The goat.
I saw a meme this morning, and it was a picture of a goat reading a story to little children, and it said, Tom Brady reading to his bedtime stories to his children.
My brother-in-law Pete's a graphic design. He photoshopped a goat's head onto Tom Brady's body. It was disturbing, but
it's a little disturbing, yeah. What do we say about a Super Bowl where you're down by 25 points, and literally there's, you know, what, 6 minutes left in the third quarter, and somehow you manage to come back and win that game in overtime. I mean, I don't know how anybody who has a brain in their head can argue that Tom Brady isn't the greatest quarterback of all time. He may be the greatest football player of all time.
Right. I actually asked a question on my Facebook feed last night. I wasn't asserting this. I was just asking, you know, is Tom Brady the greatest athlete of all time? And most people disagree. They would say Michael Jordan dominates more, dominated more than Brady did. Other people say, you know, on a worldwide basis, Pele something like that. But you know, you got to put Brady up in that pantheon.
I would say he's in that upper echelon. He's on that Mount Rushmore.
Exactly.
I mean, he has to be. I mean, and in the pantheon of Boston sports, I mean, there's no one greater. I mean, and that's hard for me to say as someone who lived through and loved Larry Bird's time with the Celtics. It's hard for me to say that, you know, that this is the truth. I mean,
above the Bill Russell years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of the Celtics.
Well, only because Bill Russell, as dominant as he was and as great a player as he was, he didn't play against the competition that Brady plays against. I mean, and for people to look back and look at the eras of football, if you look what he's done in an era of free agency, and when every team, every Super Bowl team is pretty much different.
Right.
And he's
the Patriots are different every year.
Right. Well, I mean, he's got the constant is him.
Yes.
The constant is him and Belichick. And him and Belichick together have just done something that's unbelievable. In fact, if I was the NFL and once Belichick retires, I'd rename the trophy. I would call it the Belichick Trophy. I'm sorry. Right. Thank you, Vince Lombardi, for all those years and
55 service, years.
You know, but you know, it's time. I mean, this guy is the greatest coach in the history of the National Football League. Right. It's undisputed now. I mean, you can't dispute it.
Well, the facts are out there. You cannot say otherwise. That, you know, the Bill Belichick and Brady. Is there another player on the team who's got more than no one else has the five rings on the team?
No, he's the only one.
Does any have four?
No, I don't think so.
I
think because of the retirements and free agency, there's the guys who move on
in 2003.
Right, you would have had to have been there from the beginning to have, well, at least from 2003 to have four. And
how many Patriots would have three then? Let's see.
Now? That's a good question. I'm not sure about now. But I know guys have two because of 2014.
Right. The 14 season, it's only been a couple of years. So.
Right. So, you know, but some guys are fine with one ring. I mean, Martellus Bennett last night, I mean, I get the sense that he's moving on. You know, I mean, it's like, I want my ring. It's time to cash in, you know. I mean, fine. Thank you. You know, Revis did the same thing. You know, Darrell Revis did the same thing a few years ago.
Yep. Got his ring.
Ring and moved on and got his paycheck, and he stinks now with the Jets. Good. I'm glad that Bill didn't spend the money on him and went with Malcolm Butler instead. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened last night, but some of it too was choking by the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, there was a big time choke, just big decisions that they made that were just absolutely boneheaded and just, you know, rookie mistakes.
Well, let's talk about the game. Let's like talk about some of the key plays and some of the key stuff that happened. But maybe just take a second before that. Now I want to talk about like the record set. Did you see this picture that was posted on Twitter? It was from one of the research Elias Sports Bureau.
Okay.
It was a list of all the records set and tied in the Super Bowl. This Super Bowl. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. About 25 records were set. Broken records. Most games, Tom Brady. Most games by head coach, Bill Belichick. Most games won, head coach, Bill Belichick. Most points in a game, James White, 20 points.
Yeah.
Most passes career, Brady, 309. Most passes game, 62, Tom Brady. I mean, he threw 207 completions in all of his Super Bowls. He threw 43 last night. I think 43 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know what that reminds me? When you were talking about those records, it just reminds me of that old Bugs Bunny cartoon. Bugs Bunny playing first base. Bugs Bunny playing second base. It's like Tom Brady, best quarterback. Tom Brady threw the most touchdowns. Tom Brady. I mean, you can just go on and on about that.
Right. And there were seven more that were tied. Seven more records. I mean, we talk about Brady being the greatest of all time and Belichick the greatest. This was the best Super Bowl of all time.
It was.
And the first three quarters were terrible from a Patriots fan perspective.
Well, yeah, from our perspective, exactly. I mean, but I think,
I think most people, unless you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, I think most people from an objective standpoint were thinking this game is stinks. Like people, I think I saw people on Twitter and people on Facebook talking about how, wow, the Patriots are stinking up the place. This is not a fun game to watch because they're just so bad.
Yeah, and if you were watching my Facebook last night, you would have seen, you know, come on, let's stay with them. There's a lot of football left to play. I mean, I felt like the lone voice in the wilderness last night. I was like John the Baptist last night, you know?
Well, as I pointed out at the beginning of the second half, I said, remember, everybody thought that Hillary had won on November 8th.
That's right. Well, here's something that's interesting. There was the third quarter, 6:04 left. It's 28-3 Falcons. The Patriots, it's fourth and third. The Patriots have Brady completes a pass to Danny Amendola for 17 yards to get a first down, right?
Yeah.
Win expectancy shift is from 0.2% to 0.5%.
Right.
So they went from a 0.2% chance of winning to a 0.5% chance of winning with 6:04 left in the third quarter. ESPN has a great, and I mean great, analysis of this, and I'm looking at it right now, and it goes through from exactly that point from the third quarter with 6:04 left, they're down 28-3 all the way down to James White scoring that winning touchdown. And the winning expectancy goes up every time.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable to watch. Well,
so the Boston.com had a similar article. It was the five key plays. Mm. And as they said, like each, they didn't rank the plays in importance. They just listed them in order that they happened because none of them would have mattered if they didn't all happen. Like, if any one of these plays didn't happen, they wouldn't have won.
That's right.
I mean, there was, so like you said, the fourth and three with Brady to Amendola, 17 yards.
Yep.
There was the third and one, Atlanta at their 36, fourth quarter, 8 minutes left. They're still down.
Right.
Dont'a Hightower strips Matt Ryan. Alan Branch lands on it with this huge body.
Yes.
And takes it away.
He's a very large man.
I feel like that was the shift.
That's
when it felt like, okay, now is the time. If they can take this and score, this is the break that they needed.
Didn't, you know, I felt like that was the shift, but then they scored. And then Gostkowski misses the extra point. I started to get a little nervous.
I felt nervous, but that's just, yeah.
You know, I mean, I really did. But the thing is, you know, as much as the Patriots did everything they could to win this game, and they did, they pulled this out. I mean, I'm still going to assert that there was a little bit of a choke from the Atlanta Falcons, especially the brain, you know, squirts that they had. the coach is only in his second year as a head coach. It's a rookie mistake. I mean, they went to this game plan where they were playing man-to-man for the whole first half.
Mm-hmm.
Man-to-man. And they had never done that all year long. They weren't built to do that. They didn't have the physical stamina to do that for the entire game. And that came up clear in the second half.
Right.
Secondly, when they had the ball and they were cruising down for, looked like they could have scored again. It was the branch. No, I don't know. I don't remember who he gets sacked. Ryan gets sacked.
Yep.
And then, instead of running the ball in both those occasions where he gets sacked and when he, throws an incomplete pass, they should have been running the ball, getting themselves into field goal position. They could have kicked a field goal. It would have put them up by 11 points at that point.
Right.
Which would have made it so much more difficult for the Patriots to win. And
well, the Patriots wouldn't have been able to, they wouldn't have been able to tie the game with
right.
two-point conversions.
Exactly. And so that was another a blunder by basically a rookie head coach.
Right. That was 2nd and 11 at the New England 23 with 3 minutes and 56 seconds left.
Right.
And then Ryan is sacked for 12 yards.
Right.
Puts him out of field goal range. And then they have to kick it away.
They have to punt. Yep.
And then, you know, the next drive, less than 40 seconds later, Brady passes on a 3rd and 10 at their own 9
right.
to Chris Hogan, 16 yards. I mean, it's just, this is the part of the game when Brady goes surgical. But I want to actually.
He's an assassin.
Oh,
he's what he is.
I mean, Julio Jones had amazing. Like he's like a wizard. He's like Harry Potter. Like, I don't understand how he caught two of those balls.
What does with his body should be by the laws of physics, you know, impossible.
Exactly.
I mean, he's an impressive.
He's
an impressive player.
Yeah.
I mean,
all the credit to those guys.
Absolutely, he was incredible to watch. And I don't dislike Matt Ryan. I mean. I mean, he's a Boston College kid, and I mean, I'm, you know.
I like the Falcons.
Yeah.
I think they were a great team. They weren't arrogant. They weren't, you know, there was a little bit of that a couple years ago with the Seahawks.
Right.
There was a bit of arrogance. I felt like the Falcons were, they were classy. I think they played a great game.
They were winning. It was 28-3.
I think they didn't have the stamina.
I think you're right.
I think this is the key. This is the secret. The Patriots outlast their opponents in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Like in the regular season, they win in many different ways. But when it comes to the Super Bowl, it's the stamina.
Right.
They're at the end. They're still Brady's just hitting a stride, and their defense is tanked.
Right. Well, I think that's the key. That's the key to the whole thing. They went away from their typical game plan. They went away and said to themselves, we need to do something different in the Super Bowl because it's a Super Bowl and we're playing Tom Brady and Bill
Belichick.
And
they'll know all our moves from scouting.
Exactly. So they went away and they did something different. And for a while it worked. I mean, and it looked like it was going to work.
Two interceptions on Brady?
Yeah. I mean, it looked like it was going to work the whole game until it broke down because they couldn't keep it up. And that's the problem. You can't ask guys to do something that they haven't done all
right.
year long.
Not for a full game.
No.
Not against the best team in the league.
Not against Brady and not against Belichick. You just can't do it. They're too smart. They're too ready for everything. They have every kind of trick in the book. I mean, even the stupid trick plays like having Edelman throw the pass. I mean, it didn't do anything, but
or the direct snap for the two-point conversion.
But that worked perfectly.
Yes.
And Brady pulled that off. He did that whole thing where he fakes it like, oh, the ball's going over my head, you know, and they fall for it.
Oscar goes to.
Exactly. and it's amazing to watch. And there were some bad calls too. I mean, we haven't even talked about that. I mean, there's some bad calls. I mean, that play where the linebacker, whose name is escaping me, jumps over the center.
McClelland.
He jumps over McClelland. He jumps over the center and gets called for a penalty. They misapplied that rule.
Right. That was a bad call.
And Belichick was going nuts on the sideline. He was like, you know,
I could read his lips.
Yeah. You could. I mean, he was like, you guys are insane. You're not following. You're not calling the rule correctly.
Yeah.
And at that point, I started to think to myself, is something going on here?
No. It just happens every game.
Is something going on?
Every game, there's a bad call. And I mean, whether whether it's for one team or the other, it happens all the time. I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, the refs get it wrong. They do. They get it wrong. They get it wrong every game. That's I don't worry so much about that. The fact is you gotta be able to
Goodell.
It's
always Goodell.
I mean, because what are they gonna like? Oh wait, we're looking for the play where McClellan jumps over. I don't necessarily buy that sort of thing because you gotta win despite that. I mean, you got to be prepared for that. The fact is,
and they do.
They also got some bounces, literally some breaks that went their way. Like Edelman catching that ball.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
I mean, is that compared to the Immaculate Reception? I mean,
well, it could be. I mean,
because you can actually see that ball not right, touch the ground. No one ever saw the other end of the Immaculate Reception ball.
That's right. That's right. I mean, in this day and age where the cameras are everywhere and every angle is available,
especially in the Super Bowl,
as
many cameras.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's unbelievable to see in the super slow motion that they can do with it. You know, just watching like the ball hover over the ground and his fingers are there, and you're like, oh, please don't let it touch the ground.
All of New England use their Jedi mind trick to keep that ball off the ground.
Don't touch the ground. And it was, I mean, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for being a good athlete.
Yeah.
But I think he showed a lot of his athletic prowess.
Sure.
In this game. He's a good player, and he may not be Julio Jones, but
right.
Who is?
But that's the thing, is Brady can take decent players and make them great. I mean, these guys come in from other places where they are okay, and they suddenly become great.
Wes Welker is the perfect example.
I mean,
because
you see before and after. He was in Miami, was all right, came to New England, was amazing, went to Denver, was all right.
Yeah, exactly.
And in Denver, he was playing with
Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, who was,
who's the second best quarterback, probably.
Maybe. Third, maybe, after Montana.
Well, that's true. You got to give it to Montana.
sorry, Mannings.
Yes. Sorry, you Colts and Denver Broncos fans. But, I mean, you got to look at the numbers, right? I mean, but it's hard. And we were talking before we started taping. I mean, it's hard to compare eras,
right.
And but quite honestly, what Brady's done in this era of football with free agency and the turnover on these teams, what he's done to me is far more amazing than what anybody did previously, because they kept all those teams together. I mean, Terry Bradshaw won 4 Super Bowls, but he had basically the entire same team he had all those 4 times.
Same thing with Montana.
Same thing with Montana, who was throwing to Jerry Rice
for all those years.
Exactly. You know, and so I mean, when Montana left, they plugged in Steve Young, and they kept on going.
In a way, that to me is a mark in Brady's favor, because it shows that the Niners had a system that you could plug in another quarterback and still succeed at that level.
Exactly.
I mean, someone said to me, Father Josh Miller on Facebook, we were having this back and forth on Brady versus Montana. He said, Montana,
we love you, Father.
We love you, but we can always disagree. Kindly with charity.
That's right.
But we're right. but he said that Montana undefeated in Super Bowls, no Super Bowl interceptions. And I said, okay, versus, you know, he was undefeated in 4 Super Bowls. Brady went to 7
right,
and won 5.
And
I'm sorry.
Five.
I'm not sure being undefeated in fewer Super Bowls makes you better than having more wins and more Super Bowls.
Right. I mean, it just means you got there. I mean, you didn't get there as often, right? And that's important.
Brady did it over 16 years.
Right.
Was it 16?
It's
2001. Yeah. 15 years. It was a 2002 Super Bowl. 2006.
Right. It's roughly 16.
Yeah. Well, no, it's exactly 15.
Okay.
But it's okay. It's still a very long time. That's longer than the majority of NFL careers.
Right.
He's done it. I mean,
and he doesn't look like he's slowing down.
He's not done. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're already favored in Vegas to repeat 6-1. I heard that on the radio on the way over here. And the closest behind them is, 10-1.
Did you see Brady's pregame interview with Bradshaw?
I didn't see that. I didn't see that. I'll be honest. I'm not a big Terry Bradshaw fan.
Well,
but
me either. He's kind of
such a goof. His commercial was so dumb.
We can talk about the commercials later.
Yeah.
But at the end of the bit, Bradshaw's salivating over Tom Brady. He just thinks he's the greatest since sliced bread, which he is.
He is.
I think that's wrong. He's better than sliced bread.
I agree with that. He is better than sliced. He's better than canned beer. He's better than everything.
So, in the interview, at the end of the interview, we asked him, so you win your fifth, you retire, are you done? And Brady kind of looks at him like crazy, like, of course not. Yeah. Like, what are you, nuts? I am not done. I'm not going to stop. They're going to have to drag his bloody broken body off the field.
I think you're right.
And he'll still be trying to crawl back on because he's
a competitor.
He wants to win. I think you're the one who shared the video of the Conan Clueless Gamer, Conan O'Brien.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. He had the Conan O'Brien does this bit, right. Super Bowl week, Clueless Gamer of the Week or something, where he has a couple of the players who are going to be in the Super Bowl come and play video games with him. And, at like the first, it was some like medieval fighting sword game or whatever. And Conan beats Brady by accident on the first time. Yeah, he knocks him off a bridge or something. His guy. And did you see Brady's face?
Yeah, oh yeah.
He was mad.
He was not happy.
I don't think that was acting at all.
No, I don't think he likes to lose at anything.
No, and he does not.
I think that's the key to him.
I mean, his kids are going to learn how to lose.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I loved seeing at the end, you know, him surrounded by his family and you know his mom and dad and the kids, and he was holding his daughter Vivian, and you know, and she just clearly adores and worships the ground that he walks on.
Oh yeah,
it's just and you think, well, he's got the supermodel wife. She really seemed genuinely excited that he won. I mean, this, you know, it's hard to say, you know, and it's hard to put these people down. They're just really nice people who want to win, and that's exactly what he does.
And the whole family.
The whole family just seems so great.
So,
and Ken, did you see the interview with Kevin Youkilis afterwards?
Well, I was just going to say, Kevin Youkilis, former Red Sox, was he on the 2004 team? Mm-hmm. I know he was on the 2000. Okay, so he was with the 2004 World Series Red Sox.
Yes, he was.
In the... Well, now we have to debate what are the greatest. Which one's the greatest comeback in all sports?
Right, right, right. Well, we don't have to. I mean, I think this was it.
This was bigger than down four games.
Yeah,
it is
because I think you only have one game. You only have one game. In 2004, they had four games to try and do it.
On the other hand, they had four chances to lose.
They did, but I think when you have one chance to lose, I think that puts it. I think that puts the urgency on it.
Yeah. So what we're talking about is the 2004 World Series, or actually, that at that point it was the National League, the American League Championship Series against the Yankees. The Red Sox had lost three games, and now they had to win four in a row against
the Yankees.
To get to the World Series.
Correct.
And they did. In the game four, 10th inning, David Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean...
one of the greatest moments in sports.
It is. It still is. I mean, it's not to put down that moment at all. I mean,
goes to show how lucky we are as Boston sports fans. But correct. I wanted to say about Uke, as I'm watching his interview, I'm like, oh, that's right. So Euclid is married to Tom Brady's sister.
Correct.
Could you imagine Thanksgiving at their house?
Oh, it must be awesome.
Like, you got the supermodel, the greatest quarterback of all time, and the Red Sox World Series winner.
And it's funny because Brady can come out with his five rings, you know, and Euclid can only come out with his two rings. Oh, he has two rings. That's very quaint. You know, but there's two guys who've won five, six, seven rings between them. Yeah. I mean, in one family.
Yep.
One family, one extended family. It's amazing.
Oh, by the way, I'm married to a supermodel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brady's family is fairly good looking. Yes. They're fairly good looking. And I would say that, you know, Euclid married up. In comparison, you know, and he hates to hear that. I've heard that. He doesn't
really?
He doesn't like it when you say that about him. He's just a weird looking dude,
well,
in my opinion.
I always say that I married up. I mean,
every man should say that.
Any man who's worth his salt knows that his wife stooped to pick him up. I always say my wife is perfect, except she's a terrible judge of character.
She picked you.
She picked me.
There you go. They had on Saturday Night Live, they had a celebrity family feud. Did you see that?
No.
Oh yeah, it was Falcons celebrity fans versus Patriots celebrity fans, and they had as the head of the Patriots celebrity fans, the head of that family was Gisele Bündchen, and the head of the Falcons celebrity fans was Justin Bieber, and they went up against each other in the head-to-head thing, and it was just so funny. It was just kind of a funny bit.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was worth it. And they had Belichick was on the team, and they had a guy with a hoodie, you know. And at one point, Giselle gives an answer, and it's the actual answer, and Steve Harvey's like, "Wow, that's really strange." Because it was a really long answer,
right.
And then they cut over to Belichick with his iPad, and he's fooling around with the iPad. He's like, "Coach Belichick, did you fool around with that?" And he's like, starts doing his fake laugh, and he's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." It was just, it was funny.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I'll have to check it out.
Check that out. But it was, I mean, you got to be able to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's one of the keys to all this. I mean,
yeah.
We can't let, you know, you can't let the haters and the people that are upset, you know, get you down. You enjoy this while you have it.
So this is the thing. This is one thing I've been saying for several years now, and it's sort of controversial. But I think Americans don't like winners.
Mm.
And when I say that, what I mean is Americans like underdogs. They like, you know, the Cubs to win the World Series because they've never won. They liked it when the Red Sox won their first World Series in 86 years.
Right.
You know, they liked it, but. But then if you
they're like the Patriots in 2001.
Right, right. They were the underdogs against the Rams.
Right.
But when you keep winning, they don't like that.
No.
And then people start to say, "Oh, well, you're a cheater, or you're arrogant, or
right.
your fans are insufferable." I'm sorry. We're happy that our team wins.
Yeah. I mean, why is that wrong? I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
Are Saints fans insufferable because they love their team so much? Or Giants fans? Or
right.
I mean, it doesn't seem fair to me to kind of.
Well, what about Yankees fans? I mean,
well, they are insufferable.
Well, that's true. Bad example by me.
No, I have to admit, I think I have been unfair to the Yankees and
perhaps.
Their fans because they have. I mean, you want to talk about greatest franchise in history?
Correct.
The Yankees really have to lay claim to that. I mean,
yeah.
What is it? 27?
27 World Championships.
27 World Championships.
I mean, it's incredible. And you know, I think the Patriots are certainly have made the case in this century that they are. Without a doubt, if not the greatest NFL franchise, they're 1A.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think you can make the argument that they're the greatest. I mean, what they've done, you know, even if you go back as far as 1994 when Robert Kraft bought the team
right.
and brought Bill Parcells in and they drafted Drew Bledsoe. I mean, that's when the turnaround started. I mean, and when people forget, Bledsoe brought them to a Super Bowl. I mean, they lost to Green Bay and Brett Favre, but they were there and they had a shot. It was not, you know, it was
right.
not out of the realm of possibility that they could have won that game.
Right.
And maybe if Parcells had his focus clearly on winning the game,
as opposed to getting
a new job, we might have won that one. However, that being said, I mean, think about that. Okay, so then they go through the Pete Carroll era, and then Belichick comes in.
Yeah.
And then it starts to turn around when they draft this unheralded, you know,
sixth round,
199th pick in the draft, scrawny guy from Michigan, you know, and they somehow, is the greatest quarterback of all time. It's fascinating to see, and it was the turnaround of a franchise who, let's face it, up until 1994 was probably known just more for being a laughing stock than anything else.
Yeah. Well, I remember, gosh, it was in the 80s at some point, well after we'd lost the 86 Super Bowl. It was a front cover of the Boston Herald at the end of the season. The Patriots finished last.
Right.
Last in the league. And it said, "We're number 28.
Right.
We had 28, you know, foam fingers.
Right.
And that was a low point. I mean,
there
were years in the 90s when like that stadium stood empty on Sundays.
There was a lot of times you could not watch the Patriots on TV.
Because of the blackout.
They
right.
didn't sell out and you couldn't watch the games on TV. There was lots of years where that was the case.
Yep.
And, you know, at that point you're trying to watch you want to watch the NFL, and most of us ended up watching the Giants because that's what we had. That's what they showed us.
There are a lot of Giants fans in New England
of a certain age. And even guys our age who just, you know, that's what we had.
That was the team you could root for. And they had local guys, the
right.
Bavaros.
Exactly.
And that sort of thing. So it was a team to watch.
It was. And it was at one time before the Patriots existed, it was probably the closest franchise to us. And so people of a certain age, those who before 1960, that was their team. And some of them are still here with us, and that's still their team.
Yep.
And they've passed it on to their children. However, you know, the fortune has changed. And I think, you know, we can all point to the hiring of Bill Belichick as the point of change here in New England. But you can also look to that draft where they got Tom Brady. And it's an often told story, but Brady ran into Mr. Kraft.
First time you met
Bob Kraft, he said, "This, I am the best decision you've ever made."
It was like, "Hi, I'm Tom Brady. You know, I'm one of your new players." He goes, "Yes, I remember. We drafted you in the sixth round." He goes, "Yeah, but I'm the best decision you ever made."
Right.
This organization has ever made. And that sounds arrogant, but
it's confident.
It was confidence. He was certain of himself. I mean, it's just amazing to see how that has transpired since then.
And it's interesting because I think if you look at quarterbacks and look at Tom Brady, when Tom Brady began this whole eating healthy thing, that's sort of when his body sort of changed a little bit.
Oh yeah,
and you can see that, and you can see the transformation that the guy went through, and he's serious about it. I mean, he's more serious about that than almost anything, you know. And everybody jokes about the avocado ice cream and all this other stuff, but you know what? It works.
Well, yeah,
it works for him somehow.
If
it's a miracle.
Grass clippings to stay in shape. I don't care. He can do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
I mean, this guy is. I don't think there's another player out there who is as focused on doing his job as he is.
It's unbelievable.
Was it Michael Strahan was talking in the post game about, or it might have been the pregame. He was talking about running into Brady in March or April at some party somewhere, and he offers to get him a drink, and he's like, "Oh no, I don't drink. Like I'm not drinking. I'm training."
Right.
You know, it's March or April. I mean, Brady is on. He's on the job. I mean, it's not that he doesn't take vacation stuff, but he's. He recognizes that if he's going to play at a certain level, he's got to be completely dedicated to that.
Right.
I wonder if the big shift happened after the injury year.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I do know this. When he first came into the league, he was well known to be a regular at Omega Pizza in Foxborough. And he'll even tell you, you know, that's what he used to eat was pizza and subs and calzones.
Yeah, lots of fast food.
Right. And that's what he did. And he lived with a bunch of guys in an apartment, you know, in Franklin.
He was pretty doughy.
Yeah. He was, but there was a change. I mean, he won Super Bowls. I mean,
right.
But it was just I think he realized somewhere along the line, someone convinced him that if he wanted to play for an extended period of time, if his real goal was to play well into his 40s, he had to change the way that he was eating and the way he was exercising.
Right.
And he did. And it's been incredible. And it may have been the injury year that did that. I'm not sure.
I wonder, too, if it might have even been that first injury. Remember, that first year, he was injured for the AFC Championship game.
He was. But, I mean, I don't think that wasn't as debilitating and as career-threatening as that knee injury that took him out of the whole 2008 season.
Right.
You know, and really dashed the hopes of a Super Bowl that year. They didn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
And they won 11 games. They won as many games as the Falcons won this year and didn't make the playoffs because their division was that competitive.
Yes.
And that's another thing. People try to put down the AFC East. Well, you can to a certain extent, but there were two playoff teams from the AFC East this year, the Patriots, obviously, and Miami.
And Buffalo?
And Buffalo didn't have...
They weren't terrible. They were about the middle of the pack.
Right.
I mean, the Jets were terrible.
The Jets were always... They're terrible. They're just a terrible organization. they get nothing going on there.
Right.
They're just like... It's unbelievable how they've squandered, you know, number one picks and everything else. It's incredible that they just don't have any kind of leadership and focus. And part of the Patriots' success is that the Krafts have stepped out of the way.
Yeah.
They don't get involved.
They're not Jerry Jones.
They're not Jerry Jones. They're the anti-Jerry Jones.
Sit down on the sideline calling plays.
Exactly. And they don't go and say, draft this guy or draft that guy. They leave that to Bill and Nick Casario and before them, Scott Pioli and all the... They leave the football decisions to the football people. And that's just smart. That's smart in any business.
Well, that was what the Red Sox did, wasn't it?
Exactly.
You know, when Epstein was given free reign, make a World Series team. When that new ownership came in, they understood that just as well.
That's right. And any business can you can put that into any business model. Mm-hmm. You know, you let the people that know what they're doing run the organization.
Just because you have money doesn't make you an expert.
That's right. I mean, yeah, and staying at a Holiday Inn Express isn't going to make you an expert either, despite right. the commercials.
So I wanted to cover a couple more things related to the game, and then we can move on. But okay. Watching with my kids, we talk about like Brady's, is a family experience. Yep. So my kids stayed up for the game for the most part. The youngest, the 4-year-old, she conked out halfway through. The oldest, she gave up in the third quarter because it was too stressful for her. So I did grab her for the touchdown to go into overtime.
Oh, you got it.
Because I knew that was coming. But you know, watching with the, like my second daughter Sophia, she's 8, and I've emphasized to them, look, this what you're seeing, you need to remember this,
right?
Because this will never happen again.
Nope.
This New England Patriots of this era are the best. Tom Brady is the best football player you will ever see. And
it's true.
And in fact, Sophia says to me out of the blue the other day, you know, Dad, we're living in a golden age of football. I'm like,
she's so right. I mean, you know, out of the mouths of babes, right? I mean, it's the truth. I mean, we are lucky. I was thinking about this morning as I was, you know, getting, you know, dressed and whatever. And I was thinking to myself, you know, we're never going to see this again.
No.
I mean, we didn't see it before. We're seeing it now, but we're never going to see it again. Not in our lifetime. It may not be ever again.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, Tom Brady, is, I mean, he's just...
This combination of a coach and a quarterback. There have been great quarterbacks who've had bad coaches. You've had great coaches who couldn't find a good quarterback for the life of them. This combination of quarterback, coach, I mean, you can have a great quarterback like Peyton Manning win a World Series or two. Super Bowl or two.
Right.
And Tony Dungy was not a slouch, but he's not a Bill Belichick.
No. You know,
he's not in the top tier of coaches. But, you know, to have, if Brady were on a Tony Dungy team, he'd be great. But would he be where he is? If
it's a good
Belichick
question.
had Manning, you know, I mean, it's the lightning in a bottle. These two things came together.
Correct.
And created something special. And that's the key. It's not just any one thing. And so I've emphasized to my kids, you know, and it was so fun to watch with them. And, you know, it got a little down, but through the third quarter, they would run off in the other room. But as things started to happen, I'm like, you got to watch this because I've seen this before. And I tell you, I took a picture of my Apple Watch with my heart rate. I don't know if you saw that. As we went to overtime, it was at 112, my heartbeat.
Oh boy.
By the last drive, that first overtime drive, it had hit 135. I'm like, I'm going to have a heart attack here if I don't win.
That's right.
And comparing that to 2002, I remember watching the 2002 and just being on my knees in front of the screen.
Please, can we win one?
Yeah, kick that Super Bowl. This, I think, was even more stressful.
Oh yeah, when you're completing a miracle comeback, yeah. Oh. I mean, it's unbelievable what they did. And I was watching I started the game watching with three other priests. One of the priests, I will not name him, left at the halftime and disappeared, and I never saw him again. And I told when I left, I said to the other priests, I said, make sure you tell that loser that he should have stayed up and watched the game with us.
Right.
Because we never gave up and we never mm-hmm. gave up. I mean, and I was sitting there with one of my friends and he's like, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. I'm like, I know they're going to do it. I got a strong feeling they're going to do it. And he kept on saying something that I would never ascribe to, but he kept on saying, it's God's will. And I'm not sure that that's the case. I think God's far busier with other things than worry about whether the Patriots win a Super Bowl. And I've said that to people at Mass. And, you know, it's...
I mean, it may be God's will that individuals do one thing or another.
Sure.
Play to their best.
Not to win the Super Bowl. God doesn't get involved in those things.
Who knows? It's not for us to figure out what's in God's plan.
True.
We can only hope that God's plan, you know, aligns with our desires or better that our desires align with God's
exactly.
plan.
Exactly. And I'm okay with how God's plan has turned out so far. for Tom Brady. I mean, I think, you know, he's, he's doing something right. And, you know, you gotta go. Now, that doesn't mean that he's perfect. No one's perfect. There's only one perfect human we know of, and that's Mary.
Oh, sure.
And God's perfect, but, you know, he's not a perfect person, but he is.
Well, he's great at what he does.
And he's great at what he does, but awesome, he's also one of those guys that you'd say to yourself, if you knew him and he was your friend, you would not mind if he married your sister.
Sure.
You know what I mean? He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean they're perfect. No one, I said, no one's perfect, but he's that kind of guy where you'd say to yourself, okay, yeah, he can marry my sister.
There are plenty of athletes who I think are great players who I would not be happy about marrying my sister.
Correct.
So let's move on just a little bit to something that's tangential related.
Yes, tangential. I like
the, that. The other part of the of sports, the Super Bowl, that the people who are not sports fans watch.
Must be talking about commercials.
The commercials. Anything stand out to you?
Well, I think my favorite one was, I think your favorite one, and that was the Kia commercial with Melissa, McCarthy.
That was hysterical.
That was funny. I laughed. I laughed. I think that she's typically funny.
Yes.
And so when she's, you know, there and she's like, oh, come on, you know, like everything goes wrong and she can't say, you know,
when the whale smacks her and she hits the side of the ship.
That was so funny. So funny. That I really liked.
Yeah.
I did not like the Terry Bradshaw Tide commercial. I just thought it was stupid.
Well, at first people thought that was like that was a when they first showed him with the splotch on his shirt.
Right.
People thought that was like an actual cut in from Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, it was meant to be that.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. And then people, like everyone on Twitter and Facebook, oh, Terry Bradshaw's on TV with a stand on his shirt.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, fallen for the ad gimmick.
I didn't like that, and I didn't like the what I would consider the weird Mr. Clean commercial.
Oh, that was a little. See,
I mean, you wouldn't want your kids to see it.
Well, then Mr. Clean has always been like, he's manly,
right,
and masculine, and strong, and silent, and now they turn him into some weird like dancer thing,
metrosexual sort of weirdness. Like, I mean, it was almost like. I mean, it felt a little soft core porny to me.
No. The if you want to get into that stuff, it's the Verizon.
T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
That was horrible. I
fast forwarded through those for the kids.
Well, I hope
sake.
So, because I wouldn't want kids to see that. That was awful. I mean, they know kids are watching these games, and they still insist on putting something like that on TV when kids are watching.
Well, and
I don't understand it.
And then Twitter, then Verizon and T-Mobile get into a Twitter war. After that commercial airs, like trying to outgross each other, the weird fetish stuff.
Oh,
each other,
it's bizarre.
I mean, like,
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think those were terrible.
The one that got big laughs in our house, was the Febreze bathroom break one.
Oh yeah,
the kids thought that was hysterical. The stinky room one.
Right, and then there was Well, there was that one with Brady that where, you know, he's making the pancakes.
Oh, yeah, with the Intel 360
and
replay.
Everything's epic, and everything's epic. And then he starts to go to the bathroom. He's like, come on, guys.
Okay, but the best one, apart from the Kia one, was the Shields MRI.
Oh, yeah. That
so
I loved.
We've been seeing that all season.
Yep.
That's a local ad, so I'm not sure that people nationally saw it. But it's Shields MRI. It's an MRI
operation
that they're connected with the Patriots. And so he's sitting in a waiting room, and then the nurse calls him in, and she says, "Do you have any jewelry? Put it in this locker." And in the commercial we've always seen, he holds up his four Super Bowl rings and takes them off one by one and puts them in the locker. And then in this commercial, she says, "Anything? Is there anything else?" He goes, "Oh yeah, I forgot this one." And he pulls it out, a fifth Super Bowl ring, and he says, "It's new." And she says, "We're gonna have to get a bigger locker for you." And he says, "Roger that." Oh my god,
that was the best. When he said that, I was like, "Oh, he didn't do that, did he?" That's like perfect.
Well, I can't believe that even he deigned to hold, like, being superstitious,
right?
That he even held, you know, a
ring.
Fifth Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
At like, oh my gosh! And so that was a good one. That was good.
That was great. And it See, he's done another. He did another commercial. It was for Foot Locker, I believe, where he went on a rant about, you know, why can't things just be great? Why, you know, because these guys are like, what is up with Foot Locker? Why are they so awesome? And then he's sitting there in the diner, and he puts, and they go to, and he's like, why can't things be great? You know, well, you know, and he goes on this rant, and it was the first time that I had seen something where he was like addressing his situation without addressing right. it. And this was another case of that where he's like, Roger that. And and it just, it reminded me of like, oh, I was like, this, he is angry about that. He is right. He is legitimately angry about that. You can tell by his comment, by the doing these commercials and even some of the body language last night.
The trophy ceremony.
At the trophy ceremony.
Well, Bob Kraft came right out and said it.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, first Goodell gets up there and he gets booed so much.
Oh, you couldn't even, the people in the stadium said they couldn't even hear what he was saying.
I don't think I've ever heard boos that loud.
It was pretty loud.
And then Bob Kraft takes it, and then the cheers get deafening after when Bob Kraft comes on. And he refers to, it's like, you know, I had said 2 years ago that that was the sweetest win after, you know what we've been through the last couple of years. This is the sweetest. Yeah. I mean, he comes right out and
he said it.
He called him on it.
Yeah.
So
it was great. And yeah. I just, you know, he's probably the worst commissioner in the history of sporting leagues.
His inconsistencies in beating out punishments, his arbitrary actions.
You know, I mean, and just, you know, completely capitulating to a bunch of other owners who are jealous of the success of the Patriots in this whole quote-unquote Deflategate, you know, routine. I have lost all respect for this guy, and I don't know that he can gain it back. It's just he's a stooge.
The fans of other teams hate him too. I mean, it's not just Patriots fans.
Ask New Orleans fans how they feel.
Oh yeah,
I mean, their coach was suspended for an entire season. In insanity, and you know, he makes jumps of logic and reason because he thinks that's the way it is, as opposed to looking at the evidence of how things particularly are.
And because the rules of the league give him absolute authority, you can't challenge it. There's no court of appeal, as Brady found out.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, Brady took it as far as you could probably take it. Because and based on, you know, the CBA that they agreed to, you know, he had no choice but to accept the 4-game suspension. And that, you know, when you think about it, Brady won 11 games this year in 12 opportunities, whereas Matt Ryan won 11 games in 16 opportunities. And so, you know, I know Matt Ryan got the MVP, but I mean, where's this team? Where's this Patriots team without Tom Brady?
Right.
I mean, where are they? I mean, seriously. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo may be a good quarterback, but he's not Tom Brady.
We wouldn't be talking today about this.
Absolutely not.
The reason we're talking about this today, I just wanted to kind of say, is just to let people know, a little programming note, is not just because the Super Bowl was yesterday and we were all fired up.
We are, though.
But we are. We won't be recording an episode next week. You're going on vacation.
I am.
Which is nice. Get out of town for the middle of February. That's a classic New England deal.
You got to. If you can. And I like to go away before Lent. Yes. I don't like to take vacations during Lent. You know, I mean, I want to be with the people. I want to be with my community. And I want to be there, you know, during Lent. I don't want to. Yeah. Lent is a solemn time. And I don't want to be like out and, you know, having a good time. You know, hey, it's Lent, but I'm having a great time. You know,
cruise.
Right. I mean, it just doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah.
So I'm getting this vacation just before Lent, and I'm very excited about it.
Get recharged.
Absolutely. Going out to California.
Nice.
Very nice and warm.
I'm not jealous at all. Not one bit.
Maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. So that means we won't have another episode for a few weeks, 2 weeks out, once you get back. So that's a programming note. So we should talk about, now that we've covered everything else,
practically,
what we got to talk about, what we're drinking.
Oh, yes.
That's a necessary part of our show.
It's
I have to tell you, we've talked about Craft Beer Cellar in Braintree.
Yep.
Where I go all the time. And so I told the guy there that we talk about beer on our show.
Oh.
And he said he'd have to listen. So if you're listening, I'm saying hi to you and everyone. They don't give me anything to say it, but Craft Beer Cellar, any of the locations, because it's franchised, great place to go get small brewery beers.
Absolutely.
From good across for them. The country. It's awesome. So what are you drinking, Father Jim?
I am drinking Mayflower. It's a local brewery from out of Plymouth, Golden Ale. It's a beer that I discovered, you know, my parents and brother live in, and his family live in Plymouth. And so my dad has Mayflower around occasionally, and my brother does too. And I really like this Golden Ale. It's crisp, it's clear, it's clean. It's like drinking a pumped up really good version of like a Budweiser, you know. Not that there's anything wrong with a good Budweiser, I'm not saying, but
this is a good Budweiser.
This is like a good, just it's a good ale. It's a good ale. It tastes good. It's just really good. And I just like the flavor of it. And I like the Mayflower Brewery. They have a lot of different options. They are a little heavy on the IPAs, just like most every other local and non-local brewery is. But this particular thing that they have here, the Golden Ale, is not an IPA, and so it's just a different taste, and I really like it.
Well, so what you brought me today, Father Chip, is very interesting, right up my alley. This is where is this at about? Connecticut, Evil Genius Beer Company, and the particular beer is the Purple Monkey Dishwasher Chocolate Peanut Butter Porter. And let me tell you, you get some Reese's in my peanut butter.
In your beer.
In my beer, sorry. I messed it up. I got Reese's in my beer. It tastes like a Reese's peanut butter cup in my beer. Now, in a good way. I mean, it's not like it doesn't really taste like fake or gimmicky. It's good. It's really good. I mean, if you like Reese's peanut butter cups and
beer,
Lord knows I do, and you like porters, this is good. This is really good.
I tasted it. It is really good. Yeah. I was impressed with the taste, because sometimes you think about those gimmicky kind of things and you think, well, what's this going to taste like? Because some of them taste fake, like you said, and like they're trying really hard to make it taste like something, but this is not one of those cases. And this brewery, I see them, I see they have lots of different things. There was one like, Ma, make the meatloaf, or Ma, get the meatloaf, or something like that. I mean, there was all kinds of different ones. They like to take sayings from movies and TV shows and stuff, and make that the name of the beer. This case, I have no idea where that came from. And it sounds like somebody was on a drugged out trip. And they said, hey, you know what would be good? Peanut butter and chocolate and beer. Let's do that. And we'll call it Purple Monkey Dishwasher.
I had a beer last night during the game. It was called Victory at Sea.
That
was
victory!
Because, you know, victory for the Patriots. But it was a coffee and vanilla porter. Mm. And it was very much tastes like coffee ice cream. And that was almost a little too much, like in the fake flavor sort of thing. I think maybe either coffee or vanilla might have been okay, but it was a little... this is really good, though. I like this. Thank you for sharing that with me.
No problem. I thought, you know, it's funny. I know you like the porters and the dark beers and stuff. So when I saw it at the store, I said, oh, I got to get that for Dom. He'll love that. And so I did.
Awesome.
And yeah, no problem. Anytime. I mean, I've been drinking your beer for a week, so might as well drink some of mine. You know, and we've been focusing on beer a lot. I mean, we do need to branch out at some point and take a sip of something different.
Yeah.
I almost brought champagne today. I thought that might, but then I thought maybe that might be going over the top a little bit. So, you know, I you know what? I do apologize if we sound like we're just jerks. We don't mean to be.
Jerks about
the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean to be, and I don't think Dom means to be. We're just excited and thrilled that our team won. I mean, that's all it is. Well, and quite honestly, a guy with a gun's always going to beat a bird.
You were talking about a Minuteman.
Minuteman
versus a Falcon.
Versus a Falcon. Yeah. Come on.
So one thing, just to in that vein to point out, you know, the content of the show going forward. This was the end of the season, obviously.
Yes.
Football season
is over.
We won't be talking about the Patriots again, probably till September, you know, unless something interesting happens during training camp this summer.
Right.
But the fact is, you know, our first five shows, we've talked a lot about the Patriots. That's not going to be the regular content of the show going forward.
So if
I know we have people listening who are not football fans or Patriots fans and that sort of thing. So, you know, now this is your chance now to
we've gotten it all out of our system.
And then pitchers and catchers report in 2 weeks.
That's right.
And the Daytona 500 is coming.
And who knows? I mean, the Red Sox could have a terrible year and we could be bemoaning that all year. I mean, you never know.
Sports is just one of the things we like to talk about.
It is.
We like to talk about, we haven't really talked about movies or TV shows lately.
No.
Or anything else. So, you know, we're going to try to, you know, we'll have a, we talk about what's going on in our lives right now. And right now, football was a big element of that.
It clearly was. Yeah. And clearly has been a dominant theme for the last few shows. And that's, and I mean, we're, you know, again, it's a part of who we are as men in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And you could be doing this show in any football city.
Yeah.
And they'd be talking about their team. Maybe not right now because their team wasn't in the Super Bowl. But if you were in Atlanta, I'm sure that people from Atlanta would be talking about the Falcons and their season.
Well, Greg and Jennifer Willits were talking about the Falcons on their podcast.
Oh, that's
yesterday.
Right. That's right. They saw some sort of picture or something like that, didn't they?
Well, and Greg called me out by name, by the way.
Oh,
he said he won't play any feedback from me specifically to their show.
So you're banned.
Gloating. Apparently, I was banned at least for gloating.
You're banned.
I've never gloated. I don't understand why he thinks I would gloat to him about the Patriots. I've never gloated to him.
Well,
at least as far as I remember.
I'm never going to call in and give feedback to their show. So,
Greg, we'll play your feedback.
We will. Yes. Any feedback you want. I'm happy to play it. But, however, that being said, I don't think we're gloating. We're excited. We're happy. We're enjoying something that made us happy. And we're men, and this is what men sometimes do. We enjoy our football. We enjoy our sports.
Of course, not all men, but that's...
Not all, but most.
But we'll have things to talk about. So, anything else we want to talk about before? I had a couple other things that happened recently. Just yesterday, in addition to being Super Bowl Sunday, it was my son Benedict's first confession.
Nice.
With our friend Father Matt Williams.
Oh, that's awesome.
Ben specifically asked for Father Matt.
Great.
He's a priest at our former parish, mm-hmm. and the kids have got to know him really well. And Father Matt's great.
You got to be comfortable with your confessor, and that's always a good thing.
It was, and what Ben said afterward, though, it was really interesting. He says, of his confession, he said, it's like I was living in a stinky hotel, and now I get to move out.
Oh. That's pretty profound.
I thought that was profound. That was really
for
neat.
A 7-year-old.
Yeah. So it was nice, and
great.
Both Melanie and I were worried because whether he'd be prepared or not.
Mm-hmm.
But he was. You know, the girls, his two older sisters, are very effusive. Ben is very quiet.
Right.
He's you know, they say still waters run deep. And there is a lot of depth there that he just wasn't talking about. And so that's, I'm happy, very happy that this happened the way it did. And
I am too. I'm happy that he was able to go to a priest that he likes and trusts. Mm-hmm. And that's always important. I mean, I do that. I go to a priest that I like and trust.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't, you know, a kid want to do that?
Right.
And you only get one first confession.
Exactly.
And you might as well, you know, you want it to be a good experience. And that's what we always try to do wherever I am as I've been as pastor or even as parochial vicar. That you want to make the experience something that the kids will remember with fondness,
right.
As opposed to
terror.
Yeah, terror is a good word. And sometimes I think we put the pressure on them, and I've been trying to get our, you know, faith formation people to not talk about being nervous.
Right, because sometimes they're trying to allay fears,
right.
But the kids don't know that they're supposed to be afraid.
Exactly. No, all of a sudden they're like, why are they talking about being nervous? Should I be nervous?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and so I've been trying to get them away from that, but it's hard because it's not just the faith formation people, it's their parents. You know, the parents sometimes put that kind of weird pressure on the kids because they remember some horror story from their youth or from their, you know, whenever. whatever. And, you know, because let's face it, there have been priests that are not very good confessors, right, and have done things that, you know, would consider unconscionable.
Not necessarily the scandal.
No.
But just being bad at dealing with kids.
Right. and just being, you know, very abrupt or, yeah, you know, having a kind of a negative tone or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You got to be positive. When the kids come in with me, I'm always like, hey, how you doing? You know, this is great. I'm glad you're here. Jesus is too. And let's talk. And, you know, I try to put them at ease because they're you know, it's a weird situation. Oh, I'm going into a room and I'm talking to some guy and I don't know what's going on. Because let's face it, they're 7 and 8 years old. I mean,
right,
it's not like it's, you know, 100% home run that they understand, yeah, what's going on.
We were thinking, like, was this the first time that Ben has ever been in the room alone with someone who's not in his family? Mm. Like, you know, like, whether if we go to the doctor, one of us is with him. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a momentous occasion. You know, the thing is the reason was yesterday, we don't do parish religious ed. We do homeschooling, and so that's part of we home faith formation as well, I suppose.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, and so we've always sort of done our own thing and worked with the pastors, right, wherever we were, to kind of talk about. And they, by and large, they've all been very accommodating for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know when our parish does first confessions. It'll be in, I don't think it's,
well, we've already done ours, so yeah, they may have already done them already.
Yeah, there was a thing at Mass a few weeks ago where they talked about it coming up. It was always a matter of, you know, when they say they're ready, then we go, you know, that then they're ready. And so Ben had expressed an interest a few months ago, and so that was when we started getting
that's
ready.
That's great.
And then we're looking maybe First Communion sometime in the spring. Probably when it's warmer out, so that when we have people over the house, we're not all crammed into
party outside.
We're not crammed into our tiny house.
I know, I often think of your tiny house when I'm coming over here and to record the podcast. I was thinking to myself today, okay, the kids are young now. They're fairly little, but they're going to be big someday.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering where you're going to put them.
Me too.
I bet you are. I was thinking about that. I'm like, he's got boys who are going to be, you know, they may be good sized.
Yes.
Your oldest daughter is tall.
Yes.
You know, and your wife is tall. So, it, you know, there's tallness there in some of the genes. So,
well, and we've got so much stuff now, so many clothes. And when you come into my office, you walk through the laundry room. I mean, there's just so many clothes,
yeah,
in the laundry room. There's so much stuff. This
it's almost like you need a whole other second house.
Yeah. Well, we have no basement. I've said this before. We have no basement. We have no attic. We have no garage. So
right,
we have no room to store anything.
Right.
We will need to move in the next 5 to 10 years. No doubt about it. Next,
yeah,
maybe 5 years. I mean, 10 years, they'll start to move out, hopefully.
but that's every parent's dream.
Exactly. But in the next 5 years, I mean, that's really, now that I say that, I'm like, now I'm just like, because I just got through.
Because
I was going to say that I just got through the worst customer experience in my life with,
right,
this mortgage refinance.
Oh, yeah.
It took 2 years to get the paperwork done. So many mistakes on their part. And so we just had the closing. And even that was just a mess because, like, I wrote about it on my blog today.
There you go.
Because it was so bad, but it was just a mess. But there's just so much in this house that needs to be, you know, it's starting, this house is about 60 odd years old. You know, there's things that need to be done. The furnace is 50 years old. The furnace broke down yesterday.
Oh, great.
I woke up to the smell of burning plastic.
Oh, I heard you, I read that on somewhere. Yeah. It must have been
on Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I woke up and the last time I smelled that was last summer. When the air handle, so we have a oil furnace with forced air.
Right.
And the air handler that does the heat and AC is in the attic. So last summer, we smelled the burning plastic. I ended up calling the fire department to make sure that there wasn't a fire somewhere. And there was nothing. They thought it was something burning on the stove.
Okay.
Turned out it was actually the air handler. There was a circuit board burnt out. So I'm nervous. Melanie's not, but I'm nervous because I don't want the house to burn down. And so, because this is a dad thing. Dads get worried about such stuff.
That's right.
So I call the HVAC guys we use, and they sent a guy out, and it turns out it wasn't the air handler, it was a relay on the furnace. And that's now, I think that's the third relay that they've had to replace. And I'm like, they've told me from the very beginning, when I first moved into this house, you know, 9 years ago, or eight plus years ago, this furnace is old and going to need to be replaced. It's cracked, even.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know. So I got to bite the bullet and just do it. I'll save money on oil. And
you will.
And maybe even have better hot water. We actually have hot showers in the winter.
Ooh, wouldn't that be nice?
Because the pipes run through the slab.
Right.
So anyway.
Who designed this house? Was it someone who actually had a degree in architecture?
So this is they call it a Campanelli. This was a post-World War II GI Bill. This whole area was built all at once, and the Campanelli Homes was a local builder.
Wow.
These brothers, and they built these developments, basically the same ranch style house all over the Boston area, maybe even further than that, but all over the Boston area at least. And so, like, every house in this area around me, they all have the same basic footprint,
right?
And so they built them all, you know, quickly. Slabs, no garage. Or actually, there was a garage. Where we're sitting right now
was the garage.
But they were small. They were small houses. No basement. Just not really an attic to speak of. Not even like a ladder into the, you know, stairs. Yeah,
like a crawl space.
It's a crawl space. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's the... So this is what we could afford when we were shopping, you know, for houses. You know.
And you had less kids.
Yeah, I mean, we had two kids when we moved in.
Right.
So, as I've always said, we'll stack them like cordwood, but that only goes so far.
It's true. I mean, I was just thinking, because the kids, they're getting older and they're getting bigger, and it's like, you know, it's like they're right on top of each other.
Especially in the winter when they can't go out. Like 2 years ago, we nearly went insane. The winter from heck, where we were buried in snow. Hell froze over.
It was like living on the ice planet Hoth.
Yes, which only is fun for so long.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They're not going to make it past the third marker or whatever.
Exactly. No one was making it past the third marker. what were those animals called?
Tauntauns.
Tauntauns. Yeah, our tauntauns were dead, man. Yeah, they were the weirdest animals ever. Like, why were they indigenous to that icy planet, and why weren't they effective in it? It didn't make any sense.
Like, what did they do when it was really cold?
Exactly. They didn't cut each other open.
Just crawl inside. I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Well, I don't have anything to recommend this week, Dom. Okay. I wish I did. I got nothing. We are so excited about all this football and stuff. I just didn't even think about it, to be perfectly honest. But I mean, I think I saw an ad yesterday for something that I'm going to watch the first season of, and that was that that Netflix show that you watched. Was it Stranger Things?
Oh, Stranger Things. Yeah. Yes. Oh, you haven't watched that
yet? I haven't watched that yet. I'm going
to
watch that.
Oh, and you need to watch it. And that's being of the generation we are, you're going to have some nostalgia with
it. Yeah, yeah. That commercial really intrigued me. And, you know, of course, listening to you talk about it, too, has intrigued me. But I think, you know, I'm gonna look into that. And I hope if you're listening, it's not necessarily that I can recommend it, but maybe you'll join me in taking a look at it. And, you know, especially if you're of our age, you know, in your late 40s, and it'll be nostalgic for you.
Yeah. Well, pick of the week doesn't have to be a recommendation. It's just something you're talking about this week. Think something to pick.
Well, there you go. You can do. Well, then that's my pick of the week.
That's your pick of the week. Well, my pick of the week is something cool. If you're in the Boston area, I think this is going to other places as well, but at Faneuil Hall in Boston between now and March 26th, there's a special exhibition called The Life of a Swiss Guard, A Private View. Mm. And it's a photo exhibition that also includes a lot of the gear and equipment that they use.
Wow.
I know the kids would be excited to go see that. Military paraphernalia passed down from generation to generation.
That's interesting.
You know, the Swiss Guard has been around for 500 years protecting the popes.
They're like the Pope's Secret Service.
Sort of, so to speak. The Pope's army, in a way.
In a way.
Vatican City. But yes, they also protect the Pope personally.
Yeah.
We have a friend a former Swiss Guard, Andreas Widmer.
Andreas Widmer, yeah.
Wrote a great book, The Pope and the CEO, a few years ago. It's his insights and remembrances of being a Swiss Guard under St. John Paul II. But so I'm looking forward to taking the kids to see this. It's at the Faneuil Hall on the fourth floor. It's free, which is awesome. Every day,
like free.
Yeah, daily it's open 9 to 3 p.m., it says. In the Ancient and Honorable Artillery Company Museum.
There you go.
The Ancient and Honorable Artillery Company is very interesting. It's one of the oldest military units in the United States.
Right.
But it's not a government military unit. It's technically a militia
right.
that dates back to the Revolutionary War. It's very interesting. And the membership is sort of they're not an active military unit. It's sort of honorary
right.
sort of like the Columbus sort of stuff.
Yeah. In that vein.
Yeah. So their museum is really interesting. I saw that years ago. So that's something to check out anyway.
Well, there you go.
So that's my pick is the Life of a Swiss Guard exhibition.
That sounds Faneuil Hall interesting.
Or coming to a city near you, hopefully.
That's great. Yeah. Awesome.
So that's about it. I mean, we've gone longer every week.
Every week we seem to go longer.
We'll try to keep it to about an hour, but,
this was a special day.
This is a special day for us. And you're not going to hear from us again for 2 weeks, so you can listen to this over the course of 2 weeks. So this has been The Father's Show. Our website is thefathersshow.com. That's two S's in the middle. You can email us at feedback@thefathersshow.com. And please email us with your comments, questions, your taunting, your anti-gloating, your patriots hate.
Yeah, if we are insufferable.
record some feedback. Use the voice memo function on your phone to record yourself talking to us. We'd love to hear your voice. Record that feedback. And then use the share button to email it to feedback@thefathersshow.com. On Twitter, you can find the show at The Father's Show. I'm at BetNet.
And I'm at Chines, Chines.
And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/The Father's Show. So if you like the show, please recommend us to your friends, share links to our website on social media, write a review of the podcast on iTunes. Reviews are very helpful to get the show out to see more people to see it.
Subscribe,
definitely. It all helps. And with that, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
So long.